docket matters. The first one up is 80KT0568, In Re Matter of Designation of Critical Labor Shortage Within the Marshal's Office of the Nevada Supreme Court. Chief Wright, I see you sitting out there, if you'd like to come up.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Perry-Gary, Honorable Justice of the Nevada Supreme Court. For the record, my name is James Wright, Chief Marshal. Thank you for conducting this hearing and allowing me to provide you information regarding the request for redesignation of critical labor shortage for the Supreme Court Marshal's Office Unit, which includes positions of Chief Marshal, Lieutenant Marshal, and Deputy Marshal. Also with me today is our Director of Human Resources, Emily Kuhlman, and together we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have regarding this matter. Critical labor shortage designation. NRS 286.523, subsection 4B, allows the Supreme Court to designate positions within the judicial branch of state government for which there are critical labor shortages. You have made this designation not only for the Supreme Court Marshal's positions, but also for the 8th Judicial District and Justice Court Marshal positions as recent as June of 2022. Your last hearing designating Supreme Court Marshal positions was December 2nd, 2020. NRS 286.523 subsection 5 notes that the designating authority shall make written findings which must include information regarding the following 5 points. History of the rate of the turnover for positions, number of openings and number of qualified candidates, length of time the position's been vacant, difficulty in filling positions, and history and the success of efforts to recruit for positions. For the Supreme Court Marshal's Office, the history of turnover in 2017 was 37%, 2018 was 12.5, 2019, 12.5, 2020, 12.5, 2021 was 50%, 2022 was 37.5. Number of openings and candidates. During the past 2 years, the Marshal's Office is experiencing the following personnel transactions. Chief Marshal was hired in Carson City, replacing a previous chief based in Las Vegas. 3 deputy marshals were hired in Las Vegas, replacing 3 marshals who had separated. There were 12 candidates who applied for the chief marshal position. Of those candidates, 4 were selected for interviews, 2 candidates were existing employees, and 2 were external candidates. There were a total of 14 candidates who applied for the deputy marshal positions in Las Vegas. 2 candidates were disqualified for not possessing the required post Category 1 certificates. 2022, the Carson-based Lieutenant Marshal had separated and an internal replacement transferred from Las Vegas. Then an internal promotion filled the Lieutenant Marshal position in Las Vegas, which then created a deputy marshal position vacancy. 2 Carson City-based deputy marshals separated, creating 2 deputy marshal positions in Carson City. Only 1 candidate applied for the deputy marshal position in Las Vegas. There were 5 candidates who applied for the 2 deputy marshal positions in Carson City. The reasons for the aforementioned separations included individuals wanting to return to retirement, relocations out of state, desire not to work in a full-time position, and non-compliance with employment vaccination requirement. Length of time of the vacancies. During the past 2 years, the length of time positions were vacant averaged 60 days. Difficulty in filling positions. We, along with other state and local government law enforcement agencies, continue to find it difficult to recruit and retain willing and capable individuals in the law enforcement career field. All agencies are consistently looking and seeking the best candidates, and competition is swayed by those agencies offering higher salaries and benefits. The Marshal's Office requires candidates to be Nevada Post Category 1 certified officer, which limits our candidate pool to draw from. Recruitment efforts. Our recruitment efforts have included posting job announcements on sites such as NeoGov, governmentjobs.com, LinkedIn, and on the State of Nevada job website. We've also successfully utilized informal word of mouth, oral communication, information sharing about job vacancies within the Marshal's office. Chief Justice, this concludes my presentation of findings which support the redesignation of positions in the Supreme Court Marshal's Unit as critical need positions, that employment of retired employees to meet, to fill the positions is warranted based upon the appropriate and necessary delivery of services to the public. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chief Wright. And the court had invited public comment regarding this matter, public written comment, and I have received no other written comments. I'll turn it over to my colleagues. Do you have any questions for Chief Wright? No? Okay, then this public hearing is concluded on this particular ADKT, and the matter will stand submitted. Thank you. All right, turning to our next matter. This is ADKT 604, in reenactment of Las Vegas Justice Court rules regarding traffic citations. And do I have anybody in Las Vegas? Okay, I can't see anybody on this.
There we go.
Okay. Judge Saragosa, welcome. Come on up.
Thank you, sir. I don't have to do anything. Okay. good afternoon, Chief Justice Perigiri and Justices of the Supreme Court. I'm here to give you a brief presentation on ADKT 0604. As you know, in the last legislative session, Assembly Bill 116 was passed, creating a new category of civil infractions for traffic offenses. It only covers a portion of the traffic offenses. There are others that remain criminal, and our rules are hopefully designed to create some rules that will help the public understand how to navigate the court system depending upon the type of citation they receive. We have been working very closely with all of our justice partners to include the state in terms of how these citations are going to roll out with Brazos, which is the electronic system that issues citations. So basically, our rules divide them in three categories. One are those that the legislature has chosen to remain criminal. Those rules for our criminal misdemeanor citations for traffic offenses that are not regulatory, meaning they're not insurance, registration, license violations, or like handicapped parking violations. So the regular criminal misdemeanors, these can include anything from speeding 31 miles or greater over the speed limit, reckless driving, those types of offenses. Those rules are from Rule 7.2 to 7.4. Essentially, this departs from the current practice of the Las Vegas Justice Court, which is to kind of handle traffic matters in a more streamlined fashion, and a lot of them get handled at the front window. We want to make sure that we are properly handling these as criminal cases. They will be given the arraignment date on the citation, just as they always have. The court in the past had never actually calendared that as a court date. We will be doing that for criminal citations. So all criminal citations will be assigned to a department, and there will have an arraignment on the date and time on that citation. And that we've left, unless otherwise directed by the court, on occasion, we do have to continue those dates for one reason or other occasionally, because the court is on a four-day work week. Occasionally, officers will cite for, say, a Friday, and we don't have all judicial officers there hearing those. So we may have to continue that arraignment date, but we will leave that ability. Otherwise, it just outlines the failure to pay, and those are pretty much statutory anyway, but they're repeated in here for ease of our customers going to one place. The second category covers rules 7.5 and 6. These are distinguished as regulatory offenses. They are all still criminal under our legislature's guidelines from the Assembly Bill. However, they involve insurance, registration, licensing, and handicap violations. And we want to encourage our customers to be able to utilize the ease of the online dispute resolution system here. It is much easier for our staff to process those when they review someone's uploaded proof. They can do that easily on their phone, on their tablet, on their home computer. If they don't have those items, we also offer them to come to the customer service window where we will help them upload those documents into the Matterhorn-driven online program. This outlines when they're eligible for dismissal. I would note that aside from NRS 485-187, which is dealing with insurance, which the legislature specifically authorized the court to dismiss, the remaining items in this rule come directly from the district attorney's matrix that has been provided to the court, and we follow that solely. We recognize that the court does not have the authority to dismiss anything on our own, and these are not statutorily authorized, or I shouldn't say they're not authorized for the court to dismiss, but we follow the matrix of the district attorney. Otherwise, I think that pretty much covers it. The other thing that we have outlined in both of those sections dealing with regular criminal citations as well as the regulatory offenses is they are criminal, and if there is a failure to appear on a criminal citation, a bench warrant may be issued, and that falls in line with the guidance from AB 116. The third category are the civil infractions, which obviously is a new area for us that needed some rules. We want to, again, require our litigants in the civil system to use the online resolution system for ease of handling the roughly 150,000 citations that the Las Vegas Justice Court receives a year. Most of this comes directly from the statute and the rules of Section 80, which allows the prosecuting attorney to kind of elect whether they want to take a criminal citation and now treat it civilly. This gives the prosecuting attorney some guidelines on how we would like them to do that and proceed with the court. And then Rule 7.8 talks about the two methods of resolving it. They can either not contest it or they can contest it. And if they contest it, it will be set for a hearing. Rule 7.9 talks about how they can receive a demerit point reduction. This comes from the guidelines of NRS 484A.7043, subsection 4C, which is part of AB 116, that encourages the court to allow authorized individuals a reduction. We've set up a system where we will look back to 36-month period, and if it's their first violation, authorize that. We've outlined, you know, the repercussions for failure to pay on a civil penalty, the ability to do community service, that there's no need for a specific court order, but they can get that guidance from the customer service window, how to file motions. And the last rule, 7.13, is a rule that will help us to properly follow USJR reporting requirements. In the past, candidly, our court has not closed a traffic case until such time as payment was made in full. We recognize that is not the way that we should be reporting through USJR. We are trying to clean that up and properly report, and so this case closure will assist us in that and give our customers that expectation as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, colleagues, do we have a couple questions? Justice Hardesty. Judge Saragosa, this is Justice Hardesty. And Carson, are you familiar with the local rules for other townships in the state on this subject?
Yes and no. What I do know is that there was no other township through NJLJ we passed out. When we drafted our proposed rules, we sent them out to all other jurisdictions. No one else had passed any rules that we were aware of at that time. I am aware that there are other courts that have now submitted similar petitions to the Supreme Court for adoption of their rules, and I believe most of them either mirror ours or have slight differences based upon their particular court. Obviously, we have an online dispute resolution system already in place with our court, and I know that many of the other courts are working with the state and the AOC to develop that system, so their rules might look slightly different than ours. And one other thing, if I may, I want to make sure that the court did, I want to say it was last week before the deadline for comment. We did make some minor friendly amendments to our own proposed rules that we realized, you know, were missing, either were just poorly written and we decided to rewrite them a little bit. I want to make sure that the Supreme Court is looking at our amended submission.
Yes, I believe, let's see, you sent that November 15th?
Yes, sir, I believe that's correct.
Okay, I've got it.
Okay, perfect. So if there's another court that actually has passed rules, sir, I'm not aware of that and I have not seen them.
Thank you. Justice Kadish.
Judge Saragosa's, Justice Kadish in Carson City. I have a couple of questions, and maybe a lot of this is from the statutes, and I'm just not that familiar with it. In the civil part of this, under Rule 7.9, the demerit point reduction, so one of the requirements for the demerit point reduction is to take a 5-hour traffic safety course, but I'm sorry, now I lost the section I was looking at. Okay. Oh, in lieu of completing the traffic safety course, a defendant may elect to pay a demerit point reduction fee. Is that, was that from the statutory provisions that allows that alternative, or was that your guys coming up with it?
That, well, originally that was something that was followed by several courts, and it was put in statute, I want to say, in the 2019 legislative session. So it is legislatively dictated, and I don't remember the exact breakdown. I want to say it's 75-25. A percentage of that goes to support specialty court funding, and then the other court's portion stays locally, I think, to support local specialty court programming. So part goes to the state and a part stays locally, but I believe it all goes to fund specialty court programming.
Okay, and thank you. And then under 7.11 for community service, and again, maybe this is laid out somewhere else, but it talks about that they're authorized to perform community service in lieu of payment without need for a court order, but like, how is it applied against amounts that are owed?
Yes, that comes directly from statute as well.
Okay,
the amount has to be, like, I think it's equivalent to minimum wage, I believe, is the way the statute is written.
Got it. Okay. So I should have read those statutes. Sorry to be confused on this end. Then my last question is about the community service. Then in terms of where they can perform community service, it talks about they have to get like a list at the court's customer service window. It's not like available online or anywhere else.
It's constantly changing. I know that we have certain organizations that we work with. So I don't believe it is available on this line at this point, but I'm going to turn my back for 1 second and look at our administrator. Okay. As she has indicated, it is not something that's currently available online, but we can do that easily and definitely would make that available to those who don't have to come all the way in. And we also give that option for those, you know, residing out of the jurisdiction to use any nonprofit organization.
And thank you. Thank you. That's helpful. And then my last question on 7.13 about case closure. I want to make sure I'm understanding in Part B, a case will not be reopened if, and then there's three items there. Are those intended to be like an and, like all, or ors? Can you explain that provision?
That's an excellent question. It should be and. So what was happening before, and kind of to put this in a little bit of context, is because our court was keeping the cases open beyond adjudication, which is not the way that we're supposed to report them to USJR, and it's caused some reporting errors and issues for a period of time, and we're trying to really work those out with Hans and the rest of the individuals working on USJR numbers. So what would happen is, because our case was still open, we would send it to collections. We assess a $100 collection fee. It goes to collections, and then they file some sort of motion or something happens. And before, a lot of times it was a warrant would get issued, and then the case would come back over to the court. And this back and forth of cases between the collection agency and the court was causing a lot of problems. So if it didn't come over properly, Harris and Harris could be collecting on a case that we had already, you know, dealt with in the court system because they didn't realize it came back, or vice versa. We would send cases to them a second time, and individuals would either sometimes get two collection fees, which shouldn't happen. And so there are just a lot of problems. We need a final line in the sand where it's like, okay, if the appeal is passed, if the case has been sent to collections, but they still owe a delinquent amount, it's a closed case. We'll continue to work it and collect on it. And we'll still accept community service through the way that it's worked out through Harris and Harris, but we just had to have a closure point. So they are ands. It should be an and I would ask to amend that. Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks, Chief.
Justice Pickering, anything?
Yeah, I had some of the same questions that Justice Kadish had concerning the community service provisions, and I wonder whether we could be a little more helpful to a lay reader. I could see people coming here and reading through thinking they're getting everything they need looking at this set of rules, but then it just, and I didn't know the statutes that went behind it, but it seemed to me to just be, oh, well, I don't need a court order, and gosh, do I have to go to the window everywhere else? I can do it online. And I just wonder if there's some way to maybe cross-reference the statute or to say online at the window or online at with some address if the goal is to keep people online and doing this helpfully.
Yes, ma'am. I agree that we could probably be clear in subparagraph B and offer that at a community service organization or a nonprofit organization available online, and we can reference the court's website for that. One of the issues again here was, believe it or not, people are more inclined to think that they need a court order in order to do community service, or to, you know, kind of be put on a payment plan. You'll say, okay, you've got to pay in 90 days. And they're like, well, can I have a payment plan? And I say, yes, you can pay any amount, any time, any day between now and 90 days. You make your own plan and as it suits you and your financial situation. So we get a lot of those requests where people feel like unless they're empowered to do it, they can't. So what we were trying to do is say, look, you don't need to come back to us. You don't need to file a motion to be authorized to do community service. The legislature already allows you to do it for all assessments, for all fees, for all fines. Obviously, the non-payment of fines and fees is problematic in other areas for funding the judicial system, but it is authorized.
Right. It might be helpful just to cross-reference the statute as we do in others that say according to the rates set forth in the statute or something like that. So somebody knows that 1 hour equals whatever.
Yes, ma'am.
And that they can calculate that by reference to a statute. I just worry about pro se's getting, confused by this and argumentative about it.
Yes. And it used to be an even easy $10, and now it's like it's not so simple anymore. So it is constantly changing. So just cross-referencing rather than putting a dollar amount is easier.
Yeah, according to the rate specified in whatever statute it is. And then they know to go there and look. And then they understand that it is per hour equals whatever that statute works out to be. And that they can obtain the list by either going to the desk or if it is available online at an online address.
I'm happy to make that proposed amendment and submit that.
That would help me. Thank you.
Justice Stiglitz, Justice Herndon.
Oh, sir, thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Judge Saragosa?
No, sir.
Okay, then this will conclude the public hearing. Would it be possible for you to send us those amendments that we had discussed today?
I don't see why not, sir.
Okay, wonderful. Well, then this public hearing is concluded. The matter stands submitted. Thank you.